Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Friends Church. It's a lovely day outside, isn't it? Now, we're going to go a little darker today, but don't worry, we're not going to stay there all together. It's going to come back up again. Just hold on. For those of you who weren't here last week, we started a series, and actually this is the end of the series. This is how much I was nervous about this series. I told you guys that last week, right? So I gave myself 2 weeks to work on this, and then I was like, that's it. That's all I can handle. Emotionally, I just don't have enough. So today is kind of the wrapping up. But I just want to set up my heart in this series for you guys. If you weren't here last week, I was married for 12 years in, it almost feels like a past life now, to somebody who struggled with mental illness. And I didn't know that when we got married. I didn't know. It took me a long time to realize what was going on. It was depression, anxiety, panic disorder, agoraphobia. And when I think back, I did not help. I didn't know how to help. I didn't understand. Like I don't even know if I can explain the depth at which I didn't understand. For me, my whole life has been about having enough willpower to do things I want to do. I would just try harder. Ultramarathons, we call them suffer fests. See how long you can make yourself suffer. It's just this fun thing we do as a family. My brother sent me a text, hey, you want to do a suffer fest this week? Yeah, of course. Why do you ask? Like, let's go. And then we come up with some stupid thing that we're going to see how much willpower we have and how much we can do with it. But in my marriage, there was this thing that willpower didn't touch it. There's nothing I could do, you know, just, hey, just do this or just do that or, hey, just try harder. Everything just wounded more and hurt her more. And so, you know, my marriage ended. I went through that process. And as I started to look at this, I started to see, what if we conceive of mental illness in a different way? Now, not all mental illness, but some mental illness as that which willpower has no power over. What if we who love people with mental illness would conceive of it differently and say, you know what, every answer I give them that says, if you just had more willpower, what if I just stopped doing that? The idea came from a story in the Bible of a father who brought his son to Jesus and said, there's a demon who's got my son. And he says, the reason I say it's a demon is because when my son's healthy, he's a great kid. He loves life. He's a normal boy. But every once in a while, something grabs him and throws him into a fire and tries to kill him. And my son would never want to do that. This whole week, I've gotten emails from people who talked about what the demon does to them. Some of you shared the names that you gave it. When the demons got me, this is what happens. The heart of this series is to help people who don't struggle with mental illness to love better. To stop with the, hey, just go to the gym. Pull yourself out of it. Try harder. Have you done this? Have you done that? The technical term is externalization. We look at the illness as something that's not something our partner did wrong. It's not something that our partner's struggling with. It's something outside of them. And so now we come up with our partner, put our arm around our partner and say, what's the devil doing to you today? What's the demon saying? Is it talking loud today? I got to say, I love when a book that was written 2,000 years ago has these moments where you're just going, damn, that's good. So today, to close off the series, I want to kind of push this one step further because, you know, as I talked last week, the people with mental illness were saying to me over and over again, yes, yes, you get it. You get this, Vince. And let's be honest, I don't get it in the deep way, but I'm glad I could say it in a way that would work for you all. But very few people who are in my position kind of reached out to me. And I get it, because it's really hard to conceive of somebody who looks just like you, acts just like you, but every once in a while, all of a sudden, they're taken out in a way that you don't understand. It's hard to get your brain around your parents or your kids or your partner, your colleagues at work, your boss, your employee, your neighbor. It's hard to get your brain around this idea that suddenly something takes them out and there's nothing they can do to fix that. Because I don't struggle with mental illness, or at least not currently. I wanted to bring some people up and have them tell you their stories. I basically want to let you have an insight into the demon in their life so that you can understand. You can see the people you love differently. And we can be there in a much more skillful way than we ever been able to. And more importantly, in a much more skillful way than I was ever able to. So if you'd be open, I want you guys to give a warm Friend Church welcome to Chantel, Gregory, and Amy. Thanks, Chantel. Have a seat, you guys. Okay, we're just going to work that out. Talk amongst yourselves for a second. We'll get that figured out. So, Chantel, let me just get started. I kind of want everyone, this is Chantel. Chantel, this is everyone.
Hello.
You already know Gregory, and at the end is Amy. So I just want to kind of get you guys to know them a little bit, so we're just not going to jump to the deep end just yet, although we're going there. How did you find Friends Church?
I found Friends Church online. I had tried a few other churches, and I was looking for something where they weren't going to be going like this every Sunday. And
what's the search term for that, by the way?
Yeah, maybe it was one of those, you know, God had a hand in it moment. I don't know what I think about it, but for people who don't fit church, that resonated with me. And so that's what brought me in the door.
And your background's Mormon, isn't it?
It is.
Right, from like childhood, right?
Yep.
Nice. Gregory, how did you find Friends Church?
Well, the banners and Easter Sunday, and it said something about Red Hot Chili Peppers, and so we thought, that sounds different. So, right there, that was pretty much it.
That worked then. Amy, I know I asked you this question, you're like, I got nothing.
You told me that you weren't, that you weren't going to ask me this, but so, yeah, I Google,
okay.
And also I felt the people who don't fit church. I was like, hey, that's me.
Hmm.
I don't fit church.
Nice. So why don't we go, we're just going to kind of take a step in here. Gregory, when was kind of the first time you realized that maybe mental illness, mental health was something on the radar for you?
I think I've always been aware of it, but I made it situational instead of chronic.
What does that mean, situational?
Like if I was in a high-stress time of life or lots of stuff was going on, then obviously I had lots of excuses or reasons why my mental
like
health was being affected. Yeah.
I'm just stressed out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then as time went on, and I have some family history with that as well, that
okay.
I realized that I was having more bad days than good days, and it seemed to be even in good times where there didn't seem to be much stressing me out. I was really feeling under that.
Okay.
And so then I decided that it was probably time and long overdue.
And what does it mean?
Get the diagnosis.
Under that. What does that mean?
Well, for me, I think part of the problem why it was hard for me to identify the word depression was I had a very stereotyped idea of what depression looked like, and my symptoms didn't fit that.
So what is a stereotypical?
Stereotypical would be like not wanting to get out of bed in the morning, being unmotivated.
And what did yours look like?
Flat.
Okay.
One of the other ones would be just no self-care.
Okay.
You know, and those were the stereotypes that I had in my brain about around depression, which weren't accurate at all, really.
What did yours feel like?
I struggled with, if I look back now, I can really kind of clearly see it because I can tell when my on days off and my off days were.
Okay.
And on days and off days. Yeah. So my off days would have been like a brain fog. Hmm. So for me, it would have been like not always feeling like three steps behind. So if I'm in a conversation with somebody, I'm observing the conversation and I'm frustrated in my own headspace because I'm like, why can't I feel attached to this? Why can't I be here in the moment?
You guys are resonating a little bit with that? How does it, so I know, can you tell a little bit when you kind of realized that you were struggling?
Well, I guess I should explain a little bit about what my mental illness is.
Sure, please do.
So I have something that's called trichotillomania, which is a really big word that means that I compulsively pull out my hair. So that started when I was really young, when I was like 7. But there was no internet back then, or very few people had the internet back then. So I actually didn't know it was a mental illness until I was like a thing, until I read it in a magazine.
Really?
It was like a 16 magazine, and it was like an article about this really weird thing that this girl did. And I was like, oh, my God, that's what I do. And it was like this huge relief that it was a thing. It wasn't just me like being weird.
Right, so it felt like there's other people out there.
There's other people, and there's a name, and that kind of helped me to maybe focus a bit more. I could accept it a bit more that it wasn't just me being super weird.
Okay. And when, like, do you always feel like, as far as, so correct me if I'm wrong, but when you pluck, does it always feel like you want to pluck, or is it kind of sometimes it hits you and sometimes it's off, or how's it work for you?
Yeah, it's... So it's related to obsessive compulsive disorder.
Okay. Take that down a notch. So obsessive compulsive disorder, meaning?
So obsessive compulsive disorder is a bit different, but where you have a thought and then you do the compulsion, like an obsession, and you do the compulsion to relieve the anxiety about the thought.
Okay.
And so that for me is, it's similar to that. I have an idea that like I want it to look a certain way or something's bugging me, or it's a conscious choice, which I struggle with because then I do it to myself. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Chantel, does that, because I know depression is part of your life.
It is, yeah.
Can you broaden it out? What kind of, where does your mental health go?
So, depression is certainly a big part, but I have also been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and a big piece of that I struggle with is self-harm.
Okay. So again, I'm just going to dumb it down. Borderline personality disorder is?
Yes. It is, fear of abandonment is huge.
Okay.
It's really emotional intensity. So, everything that I feel sort of outside the level of normal.
So if I go 1 to 10, you go to 1 to 15.
And minus 15. Yeah.
Okay. And what is it? So, you know, I've journeyed with you probably more than I've journeyed with everyone else, so I know a bit more of your story. Where has the depression taken you in your life? What has it done to you?
That's a tough question. In some ways, I feel like it has taken my life. I have been on disability from work since 2008.
Okay.
And it's been a fight to find any part of life that's worth living, that feels kind of normal again. And yeah, I've spent a lot of time sort of grieving the life that I hoped that I would have and that I don't have.
I don't know, do you identify with that externalization of kind of this demon that kind of grabs you and all of a sudden, does that resonate with you?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's a hell yes?
That's a hell yes. Wasn't sure if I could say that up here, but...
It's right in church, you can say whatever you need to say.
Yeah.
I think the first time we met was after a time when the demon had you pretty solid, huh?
Yeah.
Are you okay sharing a bit of that?
Sure. I've been in Friends Church for about 8 months or so, and so I knew who you were. I'd seen you on stage, but I had seen ads for the multimedia team, and I was like, okay, it's time that you stop sitting in the back row and being an introvert. You need to meet people and get out there. And so we had set up a meeting to have lunch to talk about that, and I ended up in the hospital, and I emailed you and said, hey, I'm in the hospital. I'm not going to be able to make it to our meeting. Can we reschedule? I expected a typical response, which to me would have been, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Let me know when you're out and we'll reschedule. You guys know Vince, huh? That is not what he said.
Instead, he
I'm pretty open about not being very skillful with things, right?
Something really, he probably really probed you hard there.
Oh,
made you confess
totally.
Your deepest, darkest
I
secret.
Skirted him for about 6 or 7 emails. Until he pissed me off to the point that I was like, if you want to know, here's what's going on. Needless to say, I told him that I was there because I had overdosed and tried to take my life. And so the next morning I met Vince officially for the first time, and he had flowers in hand, and I was in a hospital gown and not feeling great.
That was the one moment where I was skillful to flowers. One time. The only time. When the demon gets you, though, it takes you hard, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does.
Does that resonate with you guys?
What did you say? I couldn't hear.
When the demon's got you, it kind of gets you hard. Like, it kind of grabs you. How does it feel for you? You had a different metaphor, actually.
Well, mine is like the metaphor that I used before that you started talking about the series was like a switch that I don't have control over. So it's like I know when the switch is on or off.
Okay.
And everything on the other side of my brain is saying, why can't you just flip the damn switch? Like, why can't I just switch over and be and feel like I like to feel? Mm. But there wasn't a really rhyme or reason to figure out what makes the switch go on or off. Mm. And so that was the frustrating part of trying to discover my journey with mental illness was like, how do I flip the switch? And then realizing that I really didn't have a whole lot of control over that. Mm. There's obviously some practical things that I know I need to do, which is making sure I get enough sleep every night, because if I don't, then it's more likely that my switch is going to be off than on.
Okay.
And so I do my best to regulate those things, but even when
you're not sitting there with the switch in hand going, oh, I turned it off. Oh,
no. And then even sometimes it'd be like, I'll wake up. Like, this actually even happened yesterday, believe it or not. I just realized it now. I'm like, yeah, I woke up and I just was not like, not in a good space.
The switch
and
was
then,
off.
Yeah. But then at some point during the day, it lifted and I was fine. And it was like almost like a complete flip to like, wow, I feel really good. Even though I have a cold, I'm like feeling better than I even normally do at some point halfway through the day. But
is that the switch metaphor? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah. Like, I like to think that I'm a pretty smart person, that I have a lot of skills in my life. I do a lot of difficult things and I get through them with a little bit of grace anyway. Mm. And this is just something that I can't. Like, it's been 30 years and I just can't. Like, no matter, I can't logic my way out of it. I can't just apply myself harder. Like, if I could stop, I would, do you know?
Yeah.
So I find that, like, with, the switch is a good way. There's just, and even sometimes you do all the things and still the switch will turn off.
Right. Yeah. Is there, like, to me, it almost feels, like, does the word powerless resonate in those moments when the switch is off and you can't turn it back on?
Maybe, but that I feel that maybe takes a little bit of my power away then.
Okay.
Because I still have power in that moment, just in a different way.
Can you talk a bit more about that?
I mean, because I'm not my mental illness entirely, so even if I give up to the demon or the switch is off, there's still a piece of me that's myself.
So you can't maybe turn off that part, but there's parts that you still can do maybe in kind of your life. If this is your life and mental illness took this part of it today, there's still this part that you can work with.
Yeah, and there's still me underneath it saying, hey, I'm here. Like,
I totally relate to that because it's like there's a war going on the inside, right? Where it's like you're feeling a way, you're reacting to people a certain way, or you're presenting yourself in a certain way to the people around you, and the other side of you is like, why the hell am I acting like this? Why am I not engaged in this particular conversation, or why am I flat when I should be excited and showing interest?
Is that right?
Right?
So,
well, I just was thinking that in some ways, isn't that why it's hard when people say the things they do? You know, like, have you tried this? Well, have you? Because we're saying the same things in our head to ourselves
all the time.
We're all saying
I have that, tried yoga. Yes, I have tried it.
I've tried everything. I've tried running. Right. I've tried not running. I've tried yoga. I've tried not yoga. So when people say to you, kind of, you know, jackasses like me say something around the willpower conversation, what does that feel like?
I have the same conversation with myself. So why can't I just do it? Yeah, I agree with you. Why? And if I had that answer, I wouldn't be here talking to you about this. Because
where does it take you? Like, you can tell that doesn't fit for you, though, does it?
It makes me. It almost feels a little patronizing too. That like, oh, you like, if you would have just done yoga, you could fix yourself. You know, like. I feel like, of course, we try everything we can. Mm-hmm. We're not just like, oh, too bad. I guess I'm in bed for the week or, right. You know, like we don't want, I don't know. I'm speaking for myself. I don't want, if I could do anything, I would lift this from myself. But it's part of me. So,
yeah.
So it feels like frustrating when people are like, oh, well, you just give in or you're just not trying hard enough. If you really applied yourself, pulled yourself up, you know, you get over it faster.
Jeez. Chantel, now, I know, again, a bit about your story. For you, it's like kind of when that, I'll use the metaphor, demon gets you, it causes you to do things that you don't normally do. So it's not just depression. There's another side of this for you, isn't there? In terms of around just kind of like how you treat your body when you're in the grips of that and when you're not in the grips of that.
Yeah. So for me, when things are at their absolute worst and I can't, I can't cope anymore. I can't, and I just want to be free of the pain just for a short time. That's when cutting works. It is way easier to feel the physical pain in that moment. And it's it's one of two things. There's a healthier option, but it's one of the few things that actually gives me a complete break from the emotional pain for a short time.
Now, folks, I had to learn some of this. Cutting means you cut your skin or deeper as a way to deal with the pain. This isn't an attempt to suicide. That's a different piece. This is just a way of coping with, like, unfathomable pain? Would that be?
Yeah. I usually say that cutting is my way to cope. Suicide is giving up. So.
What would you say to somebody who loved somebody in their life with a mental illness? What advice would you give them? If, you know, you get to talk to people, there's another 1,500 people that listen to some podcast.
Oh, great.
Did I mention she also has anxiety? So
yes, I also struggle with anxiety.
Just ramped that sucker up, didn't I? Sorry, Amy. Gregory?
I would say the journey with my wife, Kara, has been great because she's always been an advocate for mental health. Ever since I've met her, she's always been very, you know, upfront about, hey, I'm not doing well right now. Mm-hmm. And that was new to me.
Okay.
To be that transparent and open and honest about, oh, I could tell somebody like when I'm having a shitty day, or when I'm going through some hard times, giving the people around me a heads up and then opening that discussion up. Ah. And I don't know why it took me 7 years of that to realize that I should probably go and check out myself and look into my own mental health to try to figure out why I'm not 100% all the time, you know? So I guess to sum that up, what you're asking is allowing for an open and honest space to talk about where things are at and not with solutions. So, 'cause solutions just don't work. Right. So it's like, my typical response when somebody says, hey, I'm going through a tough time will be, oh, well, have you tried this? Or, maybe we should look into this. That might be helpful at some point, but the initial response should be, okay, thanks for letting me know. I will be more aware of the fact that right now you're not doing well. Okay. And that might mean you react differently, or this might happen. Or something that I'm still trying to work on is having a discussion afterwards and saying, hey, you know, the other day when we were having this conversation and I probably seemed off, that wasn't me.
The switch was off.
The switch was off, and I was frustrated in that scenario. I'm still working on trying to have those conversations going back, because I feel like if you can go back in time and relook at it with different eyes, it'll open up more understanding of saying, oh, I get it. Okay, so you're not a total asshole every time we're talking. You know?
So, Chantel, what were you thinking?
Well, I do find there's consequences, though, sometimes to being open and honest. I find, at least for me, some of the most supportive people in my life, they want to know the truth, and they want to know in real time. And yet sometimes there are just consequences to that, right? They want to know, and yet they don't always know what to do with it. And that just sometimes makes being honest really hard.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the most helpful thing, because all three of us have something that's helpful and something that's not helpful, and it's different. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I appreciate is if people ask. Mm-hmm. So like, oh, what's helpful for you, or what can I do in this moment? And most of the time it's like nothing. I say nothing, but I appreciate having the to see what's helpful. Like if it's helpful to point something out that I'm not noticing, or if it's better to just ignore it and pretend it doesn't happen, and then we can talk about it later, you know, debrief. Or I find that helpful.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you sharing your stories. It's not been easy to come up here and share this stuff. I think we could probably talk for another hour, but let's leave it there. Everyone, thank you. Sure, what you say after something like that, other than thank you, guys. Thank you. I don't know about you, but I'm humbled by my learning through this process. I'm humbled to look at the people I love in my life, to see them differently, to see them in a more skillful way, to be present in a more skillful way. When Jesus was asked one time in a classic way what's his view of his spirituality, he nailed it down to two things: love God, love your neighbor. And then later he said, by the way, loving your neighbor is loving God. So sometimes the hardest person to love is the person we're closest to. The hardest person to love well is the person we're closest to. So I want to encourage you, if you, like me, love somebody with a mental illness in your life, sit with this for a while. If you realize you've been unskillful for a time, get help. Reach out to me. I can get you sent to resources. I want us to do better, because I don't think we're doing this deliberately. I don't think we're skillless deliberately. I think we just don't know any better. And so the last 2 weeks was about helping you guys learn, get to know what needs to be done, how to help, how not to help. I'll put my email up on the screen. Send me a note. Tell me your learning on this. Tell me your struggles. If you need resources, I'll send you stuff that I got. If you want to share your story, I'd love to hear your stories. And thank you for everyone who shared your stories. I'm going to put something up on social media in the next couple days, just a group that... I'm going to keep a close group. You can go on our web or our Facebook page, get invited, or invite yourself to it. It's going to be a close group, but it's going to have people share their stories, share their what's worked for them, share what their struggles are. Just keep the conversation going. I think there's a lot we can do to help each other. to close off the service, as I sat with Gregory and talked through his mental illness and the struggles he's had, he said, Vince, there's a song that I think we need to hear. So he reached out to his daughter, who also struggles with mental illness, and it's this kind of beautiful, like, father-daughter supporting each other, sharing with you guys a message of how we can love the people in our lives with mental illness. So I just want you to, I'm going to put the words to the chorus up because those are, I think, the most important words, but think of us all sitting in their living room this afternoon around their piano and just let them share kind of what's in their heart. And if it fits for you, keep those lyrics close in your heart and let them be the prayer for you. We can do better, can't we? Folks, next week we're going to start a new series called Revisited. Jeff's going to talk a bit about what it is to be a philanthropist, to be a steward, and how to take yourself to the next level. You don't want to miss that one. Have a great week, everyone. Let's love our neighbors. See you next week.